This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. They offer just about every battery under the sun, from car and truck batteries to batteries for your trail cameras and rangefinders. Select retail locations even offer cell phone repair and cracked screen repair. Find a local retail location at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Welcome to the How to Hunt Deer podcast. This podcast series was designed to educate those who are interested in becoming deer hunters. We cover a variety of topics that will help you become more confident and comfortable in the field while hunting deer. On this episode, the guys discuss what to expect in the field while hunting. Although deer hunting can be extremely fast-paced, there are times when the hunting can be slow and even boring. But don't worry. Mother Nature will offer up plenty of exciting views and experiences that will keep you entertained. Another great episode of the How to Hunt Deer podcast starts right now. Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 9. And on today's episode, we're going to talk about what to expect during the hunt. And this can range from everything to, unfortunately, nothing. Right. So this is why I love hunting. Hunting can be thrilling. It can be fast paced. It can be intense, and it can also be calm, and it can be, I hate to say it, even boring sometimes. And I'm just preparing you for the worst of the worst. But overall, I love being outside. And I love nature and all this. But with the goal, especially in this series, we're talking about deer hunting, right? So we want to see a deer. And Matt, this is another complicated question because a lot of it depends on where you're actually hunting in the United States. But how many deer should a hunter expect to see while in the field?
That is definitely an it depends answer. Yeah. And the reason I say that is it depends on, as you said, where you live in the country and what like deer densities are in those locations. Could be a lot of deer, could be very few deer. Depends on the time of year. My expectation to see whatever the number of deer is during a sit is different during the middle of the breeding season than it is maybe during the late season or early season. You know, I'm hoping and expecting to see more deer, more activity because of those changes in how they behave. And you can track it over time. There are estimates. Your state wildlife agency likely has estimates on some of that based on reporting their citizen science projects in each state where they track deer observations. You can even do that on your own property. But, you know, long way of saying is it depends. In today's day, you know, we're in terms of the heyday of deer densities when there was a lot of deer in this country. You know, we're recording this. It's 2021, and we have less deer today than we did maybe 10 years ago. Deer numbers are down, but from the individual standpoint, like I feel that if you're seeing about a deer, maybe two deer per hour, that would be a lot. I mean, that'd be a lot of deer. So if you're going to go sit in a stand and you're going to sit for 3 hours, you may see one deer. You may see two deer. You may see 20 deer, but that's going to be really rare. The average amount of time you're spending out in a field is probably closer to that one to two deer per hour across the board, across all seasons, and probably across all habitat types and states.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of variables that can go into that on whether you're hunting in the woods and can only see 100 yards. You know, a couple deer may have come by at 300 yards and you had no chance to see them, where if you're sitting on the edge of a field, you might see a lot of deer, but you don't have the opportunity.
Right.
You know, they're not in hunting range. So there's a lot of variables that go into how many you might see during a season.
And seeing a deer and having them not only within range, but being able to, like, really identify them and, like, see them up close. You may get a glimpse of a deer. That's a sighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And... but that shouldn't determine how successful a hunt is, right? I mean, if we were to sit here and add up every hour that I've ever hunted and add up all the deer that I've seen throughout all of those hours that I've ever hunted, it would probably be less than one. Mm-hmm. Less than one deer an hour. And that just tells you that deer just don't pop up and start running around no matter where you hunt. In the U.S. there, you kind of got to work for them in some scenarios. So outside of the actual sense of seeing deer, once we've picked a spot, right, unless you're still hunting, unless you're moving around with a firearm and covering ground, let's say you're in a deer blind or you're in a tree stand, you're pretty much committed to that spot, all right? Once we've committed to that spot, is there anything specific that we should be listening for or any other visual cues that indicate a deer is coming through the area?
The what in terms of visual cues or looking for deer, we mentioned in an earlier episode that you need to let the woods settle. So when you first get to your place of hunting, you can expect a good 15 minutes, maybe 30 minutes of letting the woods kind of like come back to what it was doing before you disrupted it by walking through. And that is the case even in the dark. Like if you're trying to get out there for a morning hunt and you're walking through earlier than that. So once the woods settle and you're looking for deer, some of the things you should key in on are movement. Just like deer are keying in on movement of predators, you're looking for movement. So as you're slowly scanning around, turning your head, you're looking for the flick of a tail. That's a movement that you may see. Deer don't run often. They're usually standing still looking for a long time before they move. But if they're calm and they're just feeding or just standing still, they still do wave their tail. So you might see that movement. You may see a flick of an ear. Might see the deer raise or lower its head. Pick a leg up or something like that. So generally you're looking for movement. And I would use binoculars in that case to look a little bit deeper or more detail to see if it is a deer. Another thing I try to pick up on is the color white. They have that white marking on their tail. You don't really see that. You might see white around their eyes, around their throat. They have these patches of white, many deer do, around their nose. They're small, but picking up patches of white sometimes help, because that's not a normal color you see. There's not a lot of white on deer, but that is something that even if they do change their coat throughout the season, they have a summer coat going to the fall, they get a heavier winter coat. That winter coat is mostly brown. The summer coat's mostly red, but they always have white in their coat. And then the third thing that I would look for besides movement or white coloration are horizontal lines. Deer are generally rectangular shaped, and you'll see that line of their back or the line of their belly. That's not a natural occurrence in the landscape unless there's a log down on the ground or you're looking physically at the ground. A lot of things grow up and down. Trees, shrubs, vines, they go up and down. They're reaching for the sun. So those vertical lines, and especially if you see movement kind of where that vertical line is. So you're looking for these, not the whole deer, but glimpses of parts of deer.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Anything else from a sound sound. I know that there's these old wives' tales that, and sometimes this is true, right? A deer starts moving through the woods and you'll hear a squirrel going, like start chirping at something. It's almost like, hey, there's something here I don't like. Are there any other things we need to be listening for, Hank, on?
You know, I had some old timers tell me that if the owls were hooting during the day, the deer were on their feet, but I don't have any confirmation of that. But truthfully, deer are fairly stealthy and pretty quiet.
Right.
I'll tell you, and from my personal experience, squirrels, chipmunks, birds on the forest floor make more noise than and deer walking often.
Right.
You know, sometimes you will get a deer that comes in a little brisker than, you know, their slow pace walking. You can hear that. But typically when I hear something that I think is walking in the woods, it's usually not a deer. And deer have this great ability to just show up out of nowhere where you should have seen them for the last 20 yards, but you just all of a sudden realize there's a deer right there. So I intently listen in the woods, but I'm probably incorrect in what I think I'm hearing. If I'm like sitting there and thinking, oh, that's a deer, it's probably not. Deer are more quiet. And you got to remember that their hooves, you know, they don't have these big hooves like cattle or whatever. They're fairly sharp. You know, especially if the ground floor is damp and it's not dry, leaves are dry, you get a lot more noise from things moving through the woods. But deer are very good at sneaking up on you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, those hooves are the surface area they touch is very small. So as they pick up their foot, they don't drag it, they put it down. And, you know, one thing I do use for listening for deer, if I'm trying to key in if it's a deer or something different, is they have a pretty consistent step, so that the kind of space between noise is a very consistent iteration of sounds, whereas other animals that move through the woods are more chaotic or it's more aggressive sounding. But if you hear clear steps and there's space of silence between them, it's not quite like a person walking, but it's got that staccato of step, like that through the woods. Also for audio, I'll try to pick up on other animals. Maybe the old grandfather's tale of the owls hooting during the daytime may not be true, or maybe it is. I do try to listen and pay attention to other animals to tell me that deer are nearby or that something's nearby. Sometimes it's not accurate, but I do listen to crows, or blue jays or chipmunks or squirrels to just see if there's a ruckus and why, or, you know, other animals. Sometimes they do tell you that something else is coming.
Yeah.
And the experience from getting out there, you're going to get barked at by a squirrel. That you're going to realize that thing's saying that I'm here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so you can key in on that.
Yeah. And as an experienced hunter, and as you will learn, squirrels are the death of us sometimes, because we are so excited that whatever deer we're trying to chase is coming through the woods, and you think you can hear it, and you look down or behind you and you get real excited and it's a squirrel, and then you calm down and then you hear it again, it's a squirrel. So squirrels are definitely part of that roller coaster of emotions that we all witness while we're in the stand.
They keep us on our toes for sure. But, you know, honestly, one of the things that's great about hunting is getting away from all the stuff that's busy in life.
Yeah.
But really, your senses are at a height that they were never in any other situation in my life where I'm really listening. You know, I guess I'm supposed to really listen to my wife and kids, but you know, like really listen to the sounds that are going on around you and not just not just be you're not only a participant, you're just like really paying attention to it all and observing it and listening to it. And it's kind of a neat feeling, which is why people are so addicted to being outside, and why new hunters that we talk to like to be in the game and in tree stands, because they're like totally engrossed in the scene of nature.
Yeah, I mean, hiking and backpacking are great, but there is something to hunting and being like that active participant in the system. You know, you're not just an observer. Obviously, what we've talked about, often you are just observing, that's hunting. But, you know, you're there with the mindset of trying to trick an animal or be a part of those woods. And you're going to see a lot of things that, you wouldn't expect or wouldn't see otherwise, just because you're actively in the woods trying to disappear.
Yeah. Let's elaborate on that a little bit, Hank. What are some things that a hunter can expect to see outside of a deer coming through? Like,
it changes. I mean, obviously where you are, you know, you can see other wildlife, bears, coyotes, bobcats, birds and squirrels, like we've spoken. You know, there are times where you may see other game animals that you can hunt. So you want to be aware of other seasons. Much of the Southeast has, you know, wild pigs or feral swine, and you know those animals, coyotes, they don't really have seasons. You can harvest them all year round. So there are other things that you can be looking for in the stand other than just observation. You know, one of the noisiest things that comes through the woods in the Southeast is armadillos. They just push through all the leaves, so they're and they often walk with a very constant pace. So they're pretty obvious, but, you know, just be cognizant of all the wildlife interactions and how they interact with each other. And I think you'll really find a lot of entertainment and enjoyment in watching just the world exist. You know, people talk a lot about watching the sunrise in the woods and watching it come alive, or even in the afternoon, watching the woods kind of go to bed. And you don't experience that any other way.
No.
Than sitting in a tree stand or, you know, sitting up against a tree or whatever. But you're going to get to experience nature like you've never seen it before.
A piece of advice we mentioned in the Knowing the Rules and Regulations episode about maybe potentially having the not only your license on you, but using your phone, and how some state wildlife agencies offer an app. That's another good reason to have that on there, is there are sometimes seasons for other things. And I can tell you more than once, we have a fall turkey season in the state that I hunt in, and it only lasts for about 2 weeks during the fall in the early bow season. And I've had to check that many a times, where there's a flock of turkeys walking my way and they're scratching and they're making noise. And I'm like, wait, is today the last day of turkey season, or is it, do I have another day? And just not really sure. So I can look at my phone and determine, can I use the bow that I have to actually try to get some other game animal?
Yeah. Another thing that kind of to extend this is, and it's just a good hunting practice anyway, and that is to just be still and sit. And not only will you probably see more deer if you're quiet, if you're sitting still, if you're not on your phone, the woods, the environment around you goes back to normal as if you weren't even there. And you can see some pretty extraordinary things, like a hawk dive bomb a rabbit, or, you know, birds fighting with each other, or just seeing how a nest is built, or whatever. It could be a thousand different things. It's almost like real life National Geographics right in front of you without the British narrator, so to speak. But a lot of cool, just cool nature things. On top of that, the deer do some pretty extraordinary things when they're unbothered as well. Matt, can you talk to us a little bit about some additional deer behavior that we might see during the hunting season?
Sure. There are lots of different deer behaviors that we might see. Certainly as the breeding season starts to ramp up, there are behaviors that we mentioned that are related to leaving sign for that in preparation for breeding, scrapes, rubs. That's a thrill to be able
watching them do that. Yeah.
Yeah. To leave that sign of, it's not a super common occurrence, but I've seen that and thoroughly enjoy watching them participate in either leaving that kind of sign. You may see, as the breeding season starts to take place prior to a doe being receptive to be bred, a lot of times the bucks will advance on those antlerless or does, antlerless deer, and they're not quite ready, so they end up chasing them around. Yeah. So it can be a little bit of a ruckus coming through the woods. Maybe it's a squirrel. Maybe it's a buck chasing a doe, but you're going to hear, you'll be sitting there in complete silence, and all of a sudden you're going to be hearing the biggest racket of something running hard and like breaking branches, and that's a buck chasing a doe or a doe trying to get away from a buck, or potentially bucks fighting. That's another thing. They fight for the right. There's that dominance that we mentioned earlier. There's this whole hierarchy of dominance that are in whitetails, and there are going to be some more mature animals that are more dominant. But during the fall is when deer travel the most. Their home range expands greatly, and they start visiting to parts of the area that they've never been in other parts of the year. And so you may have this really well-defined hierarchy during most of the year where the bucks that are living in a certain area know their place. They know if they're dominant, they know if they're not. But as the rut occurs, and this is the breeding season, and their home ranges expand, you may have individuals meet each other that have never seen each other before. And they're not sure who's top dog or top deer in the area, right? So they may start to posture to say, I'm not sure about you. And they have a whole suite of body language that they will say.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't calm the scene down, like it'd be in a bar in a college town, a fight may ensue. So you may hear antlers clashing, bucks pushing each other over, chasing each other, and that can be loud and really loud in the fall as well. That's much more rare. And even more rare is actually watching deer breed. It's not a super thing that you, common thing that you see, but you might find a point where there is a buck and a doe in an area, and they breed and they stay together.
Yeah.
And if you do see a buck and a doe standing next to each other and he follows her wherever she goes within a short distance, they're probably in that phase of where they're breeding. It only lasts a couple of days at most before they go different directions. But these are all different types of things that you pay attention to. Some of that helps with trying to decide where to hunt. If you're seeing that sign, if you're seeing that activity, I would stick it out as long as possible. Another thing that I do like to say and observe is what deer are eating. If I'm watching deer walk through, even if they're out of range, I'm watching what they're eating. I may not know the exact plant, but I can walk over there after a hunt and say, what are they browsing on over here? What are they eating? That tells me what deer are eating that time of year. And I generally might try to change my hunting tactic if deer are not within range based on what I'm observing.
Yeah. And I'll just say from experience, one of the coolest things I have ever seen in the woods, and it is the most exciting thing, is watching two bucks fight. And fight close to where you're at. It is, it's very rare. You don't see it a lot, but it's crazy. It is so much fun.
Well, more common than that, you know, instead of the full blown fighting is, you know, watch the kind of social hierarchy and the interaction between even like a doe group and fawns. Yep. or young deer. It's fun to watch the young deer kind of play and, you know, run around some days. You'll see, you know, which does are dominant.
Yep.
And also see which does are kind of the lead animal that may be kind of looking out for the rest of them. And at the same, you know, behavior from bucks, you know, watch a young buck and a mature buck, you know, come in contact with each other. There's posturing. You'll see the young buck get nervous of the bigger guy around. But there's these interactions with deer that are a lot of fun to watch.
And if anybody that's listening has pets, you already know these behaviors. They do the same thing. They use their ears to express themselves. They use their eyes, how high their head is. If they hold it high versus putting their head lower to show that they're lower in dominance. There's a lot of commonality that you see with pets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. While you're in the stand, you know, we've talked about this a little bit from the gear side, but sometimes it's hard to stay comfortable. I have really bad knees. From sports throughout the years, I'm starting to get old and broken. Are there any things that a guy or gal can do to stay more comfortable in the stand so they're there longer and can witness all these awesome things.
Well, we mentioned earlier about deer being able to see, and their acuity is not as well as good as humans, but what they really pick up on is movement. To give you an idea of kind of like how well they see movement, there's been research done that they basically see, they can slow down the scene that they're watching, almost hit it in slow motion. And they can see about four times as fast as we can. So, I mean, this sounds silly, but basically if I'm moving my arm or hand to pick up something in the stand, or I want to move my knee because I'm uncomfortable, you basically need to do that actions four times or five times slower than you normally would. So you really want to be very slow, almost like you're moving your arms through molasses. Just reaching for something. Just, you can still do it. You can move if you're uncomfortable, but don't just reach quickly. You just want to slowly reach and grab it, because deer are picking up on that movement.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And as far as, I guess I can speak for the comfortable, it's okay to stand up. Mm-hmm. I'm talking from a tree stand. It's okay to, if you're in the ground blind, to, you know, twist around a little bit, get comfortable, stand up, sit down, maybe stretch if you have to. You don't want to be so stuck to a spot that you start to get uncomfortable and the experience goes downhill for you. Do what you got to do to stay comfortable. Mm-hmm. But know that any fast movements, like what Matt said, is going to lead to potentially getting busted by a deer.
And just because you don't see a deer out in front of you, that doesn't mean there's not one there and yep. that they're not watching you. So just be aware of that.
And these animals can sneak up on you like that. I mean, you take a glance down at your phone and you look up and there they are. And I've been guilty of that before as well.
I go back and forth on the phone. Sometimes I think they make me stay more still in the stand, but at the same time, I'd love to know how many deer we miss while we're distracted by our phones.
Right. Now, when it comes to vocalizations that deer actually make, and we're going to talk about some of this in the next episode, but back to listening for something coming. You know, Matt, you talked about bucks chasing does, males chasing females during the breeding season, maybe some fighting. Are there any vocalizations that stand out that say, hey, I can't hear or I can't see a deer, but I can hear one?
Sure. One of the ones that you all will hear is a doe deer basically blowing through their nose in kind of an alarm call. So it sounds like a sneeze, but a really loud sneeze. And in essence, they're forcing air through their nostrils. I'm sure we've all experienced it. And it's an alarm to other deer in the area that there's danger.
Yeah.
So if you hear this kind of loud, I'm not going to do it over the speaker, this loud sneeze sound, that's what that is.
Yep.
It's a warning. Probably the most, I don't know about most common, but you'll hear bucks and doe, but much more commonly bucks do something called grunting, and they manufacture calls. We'll talk about that here in a second. That is a grunt, and it's normally in a sign of excitement. It's typically associated with the breeding season, but you'll hear it's more of a guttural sound, almost coming from the throat. Then there is what's called a bleat, and the bleat call is generally antlerless deer will do this, but it's a local communication of location. Hey, I'm over here, we're about to move. Much more calm setting. It's not associated with any behavior other than general communication between deer. And then snort wheeze is a call that you may, or it's probably the rarest one, is where it's a sign of aggression, where you may have a buck challenging another buck, or just prior to a fight, where it's again forcing air through the nose and then almost drawing it back in at the same time. But those are all different things. So you have like calls of alarm, calls of breeding related, calls of just general communication between each other, like, hey, I'm over here. And then finally challenging calls, like, hey, I'm a big bad guy over here, I want you to get out of here.
Yeah. Yep.
One other thing you may experience with those, you know, when you get busted, deer don't always run off immediately. They will, you know, turn your direction, look at you, and stop. Often when they're blowing at you, or that sneezing sound Matt's talking about, but they'll often stomp at you. You know, Matt might know more than me, but I imagine it's to try to get whatever they think is there to react. Mm-hmm. You know, try to get it to move, to show itself. But they will turn, look your direction, and stomp at you. And when that happens, you're usually busted.
Yeah.
And you might want to take note of that.
They either smelled you or they saw movement, but they don't know exactly what you are. And again, because their vision is not super good, what they're trying to do is, you're right, dang, get you to move. And sometimes you'll even see their head bob back and forth, go up and down, right and left. And what they're trying to do is change the point of view of what they're looking at, to see if they can see you slightly from a different angle. But that's exactly what that stomping sound is. You'll hear it, but not as loudly as the blowing. The blowing is kind of spine tingling. You'll hear this noise and go, I have no idea where that deer is, but it's got me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dang it.
Yeah. One thing that we haven't talked about yet is when you do get busted by a deer and they make that the snort, the alarm call that lets the other deer know that there's danger in the area, what happens next? Like what happens? Like, is your hunt over? Because a lot of times you're
might
not
feel that way.
Yeah, you're probably not gonna see another deer that hunt.
Probably not. I mean, I guess it depends on the time of year, right? Like, so if it's the middle of the breeding season, like we've talked about many times, is that deer at that point, anything goes, right? So if that one deer is alarmed and runs away, literally another deer could come by in a few minutes. So I would stick it out.
Right.
If it was at the end of my hunt, if I was only
going to sit. Sun's going down, yeah, or something like that.
Or I was only able to sit there for so long and it was not in the middle of the rut, I probably would call the hunt over, but I wouldn't do it right away. Honestly, when I hear that happen, I always think in my brain, I don't say it out loud, darn, you know?
Yeah.
But I will sit still and let whatever that deer is doing to finish and kind of dissipate, because they're going to continue doing that.
Until they figure out.
Until they either figure out or they give up. And yeah. I try to let them give it up because I want to use that same location. If I've spent time trying to set up there, I feel like it's a good spot. And so me personally, I just try to watch to see what happens and just sit. And sometimes it's like, okay, you know I'm here. I'm no way here. Let's get this over with. But
yeah. Overall, for me, obviously I'm going deer hunting, but there is so much more that you can see and observe while you're out there. And like I said, I keep going back to this. I'm a huge fan of nature. Like, I love watching birds and insects climb up the trees and other animals do their thing. And, you know, hey, I don't think I've ever seen this tree before or whatever. Just observing Mother Nature. Is there anything else that we might want to witness or that we might witness in the woods in relationship to deer hunting? Or anything else that you guys can think of while we're in the field that we need to be aware of?
Well, I don't know about deer hunting, and maybe you have something in mind, Dan, but one thing I thought of as you said that is a lot of states rely on hunters to monitor other wildlife populations.
Absolutely.
And particularly bow hunters, because it's at a time of the year where it's still quiet relatively in terms of numbers of people. Many more people will go out with a firearm. So during the archery season, the sheer number of people in the woods is not to the level of what it would be during the gun season. Now, that may seem counterintuitive. You think the state want as many people filling out surveys as possible, but many states use bow hunter surveys, and these are citizen science projects to monitor fur bearer populations, whether or not you're seeing weasels or fishers or those kinds of things, if you're seeing or skunks. If you're seeing turkeys and how many, so the turkey biologist relies on deer hunter data. If you're seeing non-game species that may be rare, whether or not you see them, how many, where they are. So I fill out a survey every year for my state agency, and they use that to monitor other animals.
Interesting. Hank, anything else?
You know, my final consideration on this one, and Matt mentioned this earlier, you know, do whatever you need to do to stay comfortable. Because if you're not comfortable, you're not, you know, and also have fun with it.
Yeah.
Don't make this so serious that you can't have fun. Don't go into it like with this, you know, kind of tunnel vision where you have to be so methodical and be perfect. Have fun with it. You
know, absolutely.
Blow a couple deer out of there every once in a while. You know, take a friend to field. I really enjoy sitting with somebody else.
The camaraderie of it all.
Yeah, and like, you know, honestly, the value of the cell phone for me is to document what I saw so I can prove, like, hey, I saw these two deer do this crazy thing or whatever. Like, but it's always fun to experience with someone else. And they might not be beside you, but even having that buddy on the other side of the hill or whatever, you're kind of out there together, and that camaraderie and it goes a long way. But have fun with it and make sure you're comfortable and having fun.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to find out more information and utilize additional resources, visit deerassociation.com/hunting101. There you will find links to the YouTube series, Guide to Successful Deer Hunting ebook, new hunter signup sheets, and Deer Hunting 101 courses. Additionally, you can listen to more outdoor-themed podcasts at sportsmansnation.com, on iTunes, or anywhere you download your podcasts. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.